Overpaying for shipping when you shop online can be murder. So shop with Amazon.com and get free Super Saver shipping on most items when you spend $25 or more, and support Rob Has a Podcast when you start your shopping at robhasawebsite.com/Amazon. Coming to you live from my apartment, it's Rob Has a Podcast. And now, here's the guy who will no longer be sleeping in plaid pajamas, Rob Cesternino. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to week two of our Who Done It podcast. Oh, my God, we were spared another week. And we get to come back and talk about Who Done It once again. And here he is, my partner in crime. Mr. Kurt Clark.
Hey there, Rob. How's it going?
I think I want to put as many puns into this podcast as possible and say them like Giles the Butler.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, there were some pretty bad ones today. With the whole fire theme.
Yeah, it's pretty intolerable. And I have a very high tolerance for puns and wordplay, but we get it. There was a fire. We don't need 17 puns in 42 minutes about fire.
Yeah, it's pretty much burned into our memories by now.
You didn't say it like Giles would say. It's not burned into my memory. Maybe if they just like put them into conversation, but the way he has to accentuate each one. And next week with the exploding golf cart, get ready for I hope this investigation doesn't blow up in your faces, or Adriana was going on the golf course. We'll see if you guys are on par. The show writes itself.
Yeah. Adriana must have really teed someone off.
Very good.
Yeah.
All right. So we're ready for next week. But that's next Sunday night. It's time for us to talk about the investigation of our good friend Dante. I thought it was odd to see final words from Dante. He got about 8 seconds at the end of the episode.
Yeah. I guess a little bit of a glimpse into the afterlife for our dearly departed contestants.
Yes. Maybe. Do you think that ABC did this just to try and help people who are struggling with the fact that people are not actually dying on the show?
I'm hoping that they are, because that would just be great. I mean, seeing the, I think Andy Denhard over on Reality Blurred had a collection of tweets from viewers who were perhaps a little bit confused that this was actually a television show and not real life, and that ABC was not, in fact, actually killing off its contestants.
Well, right. After the episode, after the premiere of this show last week, I was a little confused. If you think that they are murdering people on TV and making a reality show where the contestants actually get murdered on the show, you are a lot confused.
Very much so.
Yeah. All right, so we're going to cover everything about the case of Dante and the events leading up to the murder of Adriana. Should be some fun here, Kurt, on fun way to end a weekend.
Right, and I was thinking one way we could potentially even kick things off is, I think we've learned a little bit more about, I think, how the show works, especially since the last episode, and I think one of the big things to clarify, I think, for ourselves as well as the listening audience, is that they don't show it, but apparently there actually is a written test that the contestants take, which kind of accompanies their whole monologue in the library about their accusation. So not unlike The Mole, each of the contestants does take a quiz about the circumstances of the murder.
Yeah, it's odd, and they don't show it to us, but a lot of people have brought this to my attention, that if you like pause the credits, almost like at the end of like Two and a Half Men, or there's like the card where if you pause it, you could read it. And so if you pause the fine print, it says that the eliminations are based on an exam that everybody takes. So there you go.
And also, I think just some of the comments I've read on other sites and on Rob Has a Website and on your Facebook page, it seems like there is some confusion about if there's a different killer each week or if the killer even knows who they are. And I have to pretty much categorically put my foot down on those and say, the convention of the show is that there's a single killer. It's one of the contestants. They know that they're the killer. And they're that same identity of that same person from week to week. I don't think there's any kind of tampering with the story here where suddenly the guilty party switches for some reason week to week. It's kind of more of a conventional whodunit, so to speak.
So to speak. So we are on the trail of a killer here. Yep. And, you know, for everybody who was saying that they think Adriana was the killer, and again, it was the second week in a row where the most people thought Adriana was the killer. Has Adriana shown you anything that she is the least bit capable of putting together a murderous plot?
No, she's not the most subtle person. I think she's gotten turned away from the cool kids' lunch table about four times in the course of two episodes.
Yeah, I made that same that same observation in my notes about the cool kids alliance a la Survivor Cara Moen.
Yeah, and I think her just nosiness and inquisitiveness as a TV crime reporter came across as suspicious. And I for one, this sounds bad, I for one am a little bit glad she's gone, because I was having the toughest time, as I said last week, telling the difference between her and Dana, the
crazy
cardiac
Dana
nurse.
Yeah.
So the one who seems to have it out for Ulysses.
Yeah. So and really, yeah, and she was saying like, Ulysses, he's not listening to me, I'm gonna kill him. And whoa, red flag here, Dana talking about killing people.
Yeah, something about like, you know, pinching his head off or something. And I was, until we got to the point where Ulysses was actually where the killer told him that he was on fire with his accusations and he was the most correct, I had thought it would be quite a turn if he'd actually been the one who ended up dead in a way that was kind of prophesized by Dana, because then that would kind of point the finger at her a little bit.
Yeah, there you go. So, all right. So how about this, Kurt? This is where I want to start tonight with this conversation, or continue this conversation. So we've seen sort of like the genesis and the evolution of this game in its early stages, like kind of like how we've seen, you know, the first season of Survivor evolved and eventually Big Brother evolved. So we're seeing the strategy of how to play this game evolve before our eyes. So we see these alliances forming. Is this the right thing to do? We see it's sort of like two schools of thoughts, where we have Cam at the head of this one alliance, and then Gino and a couple other players are sort of like I don't think I want to be part of a big alliance. What do you think is the right way to win the game?
I think it's to find a threesome. It seems that there's going to be three different places that you can investigate each week, and as much as I and not the biggest Cam fan, I think he kind of had the right ideas. Like, as long as you have three people that you can trust, or two other people that you can trust, and you kind of each go to one of the locations and find out as much you can, and the three of you just get back together and compare notes, and you should be good, at least from the investigation standpoint. I mean, if you don't have anybody in any of the other locations that you can completely trust, then you're kind of finding out one third of the story and taking two thirds of the story on faith.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. Now, we had four people eventually in the Cool Kids Alliance. So was it that Cam just picked the wrong person for the third person? It seemed like it was sort of an arbitrary thing that he picked Lindsay, and then he realized that Chris was the better pick, right? That was the fourth girl that they added, or the second girl that they added?
I mean, he's kind of, it's the classic RC Abby Maria day one alliance mistake. I mean, he picked Gino running out of the gate and not realizing that this wasn't really how Gino wanted to play the game. And then he picked Lindsay, but then he thought Chris is better, but didn't want to dump Lindsay. So now they have four people in there. And I guess the good news is that you can lose one of them to the killer and you still have your three. I don't know.
I guess so. You have some redundancy there. That's good thinking.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you would think, I mean, I felt like it was kind of anticlimactic once they award Ulysses as the person who got the most things right. Like when he's saying, okay, Cam, open your envelope. It's yeah. like, well, if the guy that he was working with got the most things right, then I would have to say that I think it's a pretty safe bet that Cam's going to be spared tonight.
Yeah, and not only that, it's, I think, well, at least we as viewers are in kind of an interesting position because we get to see the full story of the investigation. So we know all three-thirds of it, so to speak. And they, and unfortunately, it gets a little bit confusing because you can't always remember or file like who told who what and who actually successfully bartered for information. And so I couldn't remember as accusations were being made and as the cards were being distributed around the dinner table, who were the people who actually made the correct accusation? Who were the people that were aligned with Ulysses? And what did Ulysses actually share with people he was aligned with? Because remember, last week, Dante was in the morgue, and he was there to witness the big metal pellet in the back of Sherry's neck, and he still guessed that she drowned.
poor Dante.
So, yeah, poor Dante. And ironically, somebody actually guessed that he drowned this week. I think that was Melina. So I'm hoping that next week somebody guesses that Adriana drowned, just to keep that ball going.
Just to keep it going. All right, so let's go back to Giles, and then we'll go through all of the crime scenes in this episode. So Giles, I thought this they glossed over this very quickly, but is Giles have a bomb strapped to his leg?
Giles is low-jacked with explosives.
And how did this happen to Giles without him learning the killer's identity? Or does Giles know the killer's identity?
He said that he doesn't. He said that he, in the intro to the series last week, he was kind of giving a voiceover in his room saying he showed up and his employer wasn't here. A little, again, like Wadsworth and Clue. He hadn't met his employer. And it's not exactly clear on how he ended up getting that on his ankle, if he's been here the whole time. I wonder if it's in that book that's being sold on ABC.com about the backstory of Giles. Maybe that explains the explosive on the ankle.
Okay. So, yeah, and he sort of doesn't bother him. He's still, you know, rattling off the puns, and he's the one with the explosive strapped to his leg.
Yeah, and he's pretty calm about it, I do want to note that he is surrounded as always by his two maids, and for the record, we learned that one of them, her name is Sophie.
Sophie, okay, we like Sophies.
Yes, we do.
And one of the things I don't care for about Giles, though, is that he pronounces the H's in words that start with WH. And there's a really great, funny Family Guy clip about this where Stewie keeps saying cool with hip. And any word that starts with a WH, Giles pronounces the H, and it's very annoying. I find it irritating.
Does he actually say, who done it?
Who do you think, which of you could it be? So that's one of the annoying things, of the many annoying things about Giles. I can't tell you if I love or hate Giles.
I like the fact that he's kind of starting, and I think this might be where we differ, he's embracing the campiness of the role, the bit. He's the voice of the killer. He's reading in terms of he's reading the killer's notes to everybody. And he's making the puns, and it's, you know, I think if we saw from last week, if people take the game too seriously and there's not some tongue in cheek, aspect to this, then it's going to come off as really, really false in terms of a production.
Yeah. Well, I really didn't like when the players are talking about how, like, oh my God, it was so, like Cam is talking about how I had to jump in the water, and I mean, that's the same water that Dante died in. He didn't die. Everybody, let's not pretend that this is actually the water that a corpse was in. Like, why are they, like, I understand the premise of the show, but why are we getting fake concern from Cam about something that we know is not true?
Right, and And Melina and Dana crying as much as they are seems a bit much as well. And to peel the curtain back a little bit, I had read how online how that the stunt person who was set on fire to simulate Dante's death. So again, for the audience, it was not actually Dante who was expected to pull off a senior level stuntsman task of being set on fire and throwing oneself into a pool. It was a stunt person, and that stunt had to actually be done like three or four times before they got it right for the actual airing of the show. So imagine if you're this crowd of people, the players, the contestants out on the back patio, and it's like take three, have the burning person come out of the building. Take four. So I mean, even there, in terms of the production, in terms of them, I alluded to last week, letting themselves get immersed in the story, it kind of breaks down a little bit when you have to sit through three or four takes of a person on fire running out of the house and launching themselves into the pool.
Yeah, well, then you got to see all the clues. You got to see the reenactment four times.
There you go.
Yeah. So at what point, Kirk, did you figure out what was going on?
In terms of how Dante was killed?
Yes.
I would have to say there was one point where I actually took down in my notes something about static electricity.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm actually going through it right now. I can't remember exactly what point. It might have been sometime when they were it's when the flags were being passed out during the riddle portion of the investigation. So, you know, you've got to investigate I'm kind of breaking it down into the stages, like you have in Survivor. You've got the, you know, the Roar Challenge, the Immunity Challenge, and Tribal Council. Here you've got the death, the investigation, the inevitable brunch where nobody compares accurate notes. And I was going to say, there was the pajama brunch. I know I commented last week. He said he was handing out pajamas and socks for pajama brunch on the next day. Yeah. And sure enough, it was there. That's where they compared their notes. And then there's the riddle, I think it's called. In this case, it was flags.
Yes.
And a clue worthy of tree mail.
Yes, that's what I wrote down too. That basically the killer leaves tree mail every week for the players and then gives them all like a little souvenir, a little swag from the killer.
And what I had in my notes was part of the rhyme on the back of the flag, part of the riddle, was about how dragging your feet will be the death of you. And that's when I thought that might be how Dante died, that there was some sort of that static electricity. I hadn't quite connected the plaid robe soaked in benzene yet, but I figured there was some sort of accelerant. But when there was the clue on the back of the flag that said dragging your feet might be the death of you, that's when I thought that static electricity might have had some role in the larger picture.
Yeah, I think you were a little ahead of me. I think I kind of put it together when I think Ronnie was the one talking about socks and the carpet. I think he might have been talking with Don at the same time everybody was looking around during the riddle portion of the investigation. So let's go through the three locations real quick. The last known whereabouts. Anything interesting about Dante's bedroom?
You know, the main clues there were that explosion point, that burst of soot at the doorknob. There was the medallion and the note, and then the slightly scorched lamp. I'm just kind of thinking about I'm still unclear, I guess, on if the medallion, other than having a little bit of irony in that it was Saint Agatha, protector from fire or whatever, and he ended up burning up. Like, I wasn't clear on if the mechanics of the death, he had to be wearing the medallion, or if it was just enough to have the robe soaked in benzene and the static electricity. So I'm not sure what the role of the actual Saint Agatha pendant was in the whole overarching thing.
Yeah, a lot of people are confused about that. I got some questions on Twitter from our listeners. Jackson Kruger wants to know, what did the necklace have to do with anything? It just seems like that was either a red herring or they just liked the irony. And for everybody trying to throw you off with Saint Agatha, Saint Agnes, St. Andrew, St. Adriana. For all the, unless that was a question on the quiz, then that did not play a role whatsoever. And I thought maybe that had to do with something with detonated, or the necklace was what kept, you know, made him not be able to get out of the pool. But none of those things.
Yeah, I'm of like mind in terms of, I'm guessing there was a question on the quiz that's just about overall details about the crime scene or the situation. And even though it wasn't instrumental in his death, it could very well have been a question on the quiz.
Yeah. So let's see. What else do we need to cover? Then we have the crime scene. Now, did you feel like the pool was the crime scene? I kind of felt like the bedroom was still the crime scene.
I felt that the bedroom was the crime scene myself. It was a little bit like, you know, last week when Sherry was dead in the foyer and they could go search her, what was the last known whereabouts? It's like, well, her last known whereabouts are on the floor in the next room. I don't know why they have to go up to her bedroom for that, but I think just like this, yeah, it's like the scene of the resting of the body.
Yeah. Now, for everybody else that's left in the game here, if the killer leaves you something to eat, to wear, to put on, I feel like I would avoid.
Yes. I'd like, for instance, not getting too far ahead of ourselves, the bowl of Cheerios that Adriana appears to be eating at the beginning of her death scene at the end of the episode.
Yeah.
Anything that is going to be consumed, even like that. I do have to say, I did like the touch of the flambéed pig head at dinner. Giles asking too soon terms of that was quite clever, but yeah, anything strange or unusual, unless you have no reason not to suspect that all of the other players or contestants are being given the same thing. But again, peeling back the curtain, I'm guessing what happened was shortly after going to bed. I mean, obviously, the flashback that we got to see was all being heavily directed and orchestrated by the producers and giving stage direction to Dante to do everything anyway. So it's not like he had a chance to avoid that death in any way.
Are you saying that Dante isn't dead, Kurt?
I don't want to start any sort of conspiracy theories or... several tweets and even I think some commentary on the show making a Dante's Inferno references, which I thought was quite clever, but I'm afraid that our friend Dante is probably very much alive.
Yeah. Okay. Now, did it just happen to work out for Dante, or did the producers realize they had somebody named Dante to be cast and they just figured out, okay, let's put this murder into motion when he is eliminated? Is that how this all worked? Like, right. For instance, if Don, and I know that it's they could have called it Don's Inferno,
right.
But I mean, okay, let's say Adriana got eliminated in week one. Would this have been Adriana's Inferno this week?
You know what? I have reason to believe, based on some actual clues in tonight's episode, that the upcoming murders are predetermined and, are not based on, are predetermined episode to episode and not based on who it is that was actually the loser of that episode. For instance, if it had been Dana who had been killed tonight instead, I have strong reason to suspect it still would have been the exploding golf cart. And I can talk about that theory later.
Okay, we'll see if there's anything that ties Adriana to the golf course next week. So then in the morgue, really nothing too interesting in the morgue except for the fact that his pajamas were different than everybody else's. Just seems like a little bit of overkill by the murderer why couldn't he have just doused the pajamas that everybody else wore in benzene? Is that so he didn't get confused?
Probably. Actually, that was going to be my first guess, was to kind of keep them to keep them separate, or maybe he didn't have access ahead of time to the estate issued pajamas. But I thought it was an interesting, I mean, that was a pretty vital clue, the fact that they were plaid they were plaid pajamas instead. And I think the other thing that Don, with his background in arson homicide, kind of pulled out was that fact that the right arm was much more burnt than the left arm, indicating that the right arm was somehow near or closer to the source of the fire.
Now, does Don's background in arson homicide make him more of a suspect?
No.
Oh.
I'd say it's his cover story of the football coach that he's refusing to let go of makes him more of a suspect.
Right. Now, how about Gino? Do you feel like Gino made an error by not going with this alliance with Cam and Ulysses? Because I feel like he did.
I think he, yeah, I do. I don't know what his game plan is because he doesn't seem to have any ins with other people in ways to get information. But we've seen the desperation that Melina and Dana seem to have. So at the very least, you've got some ready-made partnerships that you could potentially jump into. Even Don. I mean, there's other people who seem like they'd be willing to kind of at least take the same approach that Cam is taking in terms of getting a strong core together.
Yeah.
But it seems like but at the same time, it seems like every time we see a group at the morgue or a group at the crime scene, it's like another mini temporary alliance forms there that, you know, oh, we know the three of us in it. We're not going to tell anybody else about what we found in the swimming pool. And so which alliance are you following? The one where you kind of have split up amongst all the crime scenes, or the one with the people that you're with then and there at the crime scene?
Yeah. It seems like all the information from the three locations all sort of ends up sort of just being, you know, transmitted to everybody. And then it's the riddle that's really, like, if you're not in the room when they whoever solves the riddle solves the riddle, you're really flying blind, I feel like, going into that final thing. I feel like that's really what it comes down to. It's like you have to be the person that solves the riddle, and if you don't know how the riddle got solved, then you're kind of screwed.
Yeah. I mean, and if that isn't straight out of Clue, the movie, the running around the house and colliding with people and trying to be in all places at all times, I don't know what is. But that part's fun for me in terms of I actually think that those clues and kind of the trail of clues you have to follow in the riddle portion of the show is pretty interesting to follow and kind of a fun little challenge. Though I get a little bit annoyed at the comparing of notes at the post-investigation brunch. But yeah, the riddle part's kind of fun.
Yeah. I thought it was a great sequence, though, when... So basically, we have the new Cool Kids Alliance, Cam, Ulysses, and Chris and Lindsay, and they're sitting there, and then like one by one, like people keep coming over. It starts with Sasha, and she's like talking all tough, and she's telling Gino that she's like, oh, I see them over there. I'm just gonna go over there. And Gino's like, so you're just gonna, but they're in the middle of talking. She's like, I don't care, I'll just go over there. I don't care.
What are they going to do? Tell me to go away?
Yeah, what are they going to do? Tell me to go away?
And then it turns out,
Cam is like, could you please leave us alone? And she's like, why? I want to talk with you guys. He's like, well, we're in the middle of something right now, so you have to come back. And then Adriana is like, but I want to talk to you. She's like, but you have to go away. Seriously, we don't want you around at all. Like, please go away.
Hey, go sell crazy somewhere else, Adriana.
Yeah. So that I thought that was very funny. And Dana's reaction was really great about that. Ulysses!
I'll be there in a minute.
Yeah.
Like, and the way she was referring to him was a little bit like a dog. It's like, I told him to come and he did not come.
Yeah, so he's in trouble.
Oh, he is in trouble.
Yeah, and then...
And she was staring daggers at him at the dinner table, too, when he got the best student in class award from the killer.
Yes, very upsetting for Dana. All right, so I have some questions here from our listeners. You ready for some questions from the audience?
Let's do it.
All right, let's start with Josh Smith from Twitter. He wants to know, was the confessional from Dante at the end of the episode, was that ABC proving that they're just not killing people? And I have to say, yes, I believe so.
I except that I think for the people that that's actually going to make a difference to, they are probably beside themselves freaking out now that Adriana's dead in a tree. And they may not be paying attention to anything that happens after the credits.
Shouldn't, you know, I felt like, should that final words from Dante, shouldn't that have been in the last episode?
I think it, putting it at the end of this episode creates a nice bookend for Dante's story, because I think putting him like right at the end of the last episode, it's almost too soon to his
too
removal soon. From the, yeah, too soon.
Too confusing. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think it's nice that at the end of the last episode, he plunges into the pool, engulfed in flames. This entire episode spent trying to figure out what his what happened in his murder. There's the recap from the flashback that we see. And then at the end of the episode, you have a nice little tag at the end with him talking about his time on the show. So I think that's good.
All right. BB Girl 2659 wants to know, if the killer is a cast member, do they get money too at the end or not? I would have to think so.
I'm guessing it's not considered like prize money, but I'm guessing it's like remuneration and payment for just their part in the show. They're essentially a cast member. It was just like on The Mole, the person was being paid to act as The Mole. It's not that The Mole got the money that was withheld from the pot through all the challenges. It was, you know, they're on the payroll of the production crew, and I have to imagine it's pretty much the same thing here.
Yeah, I would have to imagine they're making a killing. Alex,
yes.
Wilpon wants to know, I wish that they were leaving clues about who the killer is. This
yes.
seems like an oversight. Thoughts? Yes. Should we be getting clues as to the identity of the killer, or will it just be, and at the end of the episode, like it's going to be like a Scooby-Doo ending?
Exactly. Actually, it's funny you mentioned the Scooby-Doo ending, because at some point, I think it was Giles or somebody, basically mentions, and whoever makes it, basically, these contestants are competing for a chance to be at the end for the unmasking of the killer. So it's, and again, just like last week, it's all about how the murder was done. There's very little emphasis on who the killer is. And I was actually, I think it was on the Facebook page having an exchange with Eric Stein about the show. And I kind of, in my going back and forth with him, I kind of came to realize that unlike The Mole, knowing on who done it beyond the shadow of a doubt, who the killer is does not help you at all in the game. I could know for certain that it was Lindsay, for example, but I still have to take that quiz, and there might be one question on there about who do you think the killer is, and I get that right. But if there's all these other questions about that are really focusing on how the murder was conducted. In this game, knowing who the killer is doesn't get you further in the game, because we also don't know if it's the murderer's role to mess up the investigation or to confuse people. We really don't have any idea of what their role in the day-to-day is. The Mole, you knew, was there to sabotage challenges. Here, it's like, you know, if the murderer is on the little alliance that you put together, is that necessarily a bad thing? We just don't know.
Yeah, for instance, if Gino is the murderer, if you could say, okay, I think Gino's the murderer, I'm just going to ignore everything Gino tells me, and then that's basically it.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, because the rules are pretty much put in place that if you're getting questions right and if you're investigating intelligently, then even if the murderer knows that you know they're the murderer, you're going to make it to the end. So that is something that I think is kind of an oversight here, is there's not a lot of looking at who the murderer is. But we talked about that last week. Like, what are the odds that Adriana could shoot a slingshot through a window, you know, at 100 paces and kill somebody? Like, who knows about, well, obviously Adriana couldn't. We know that she's not the killer, but like who has background enough to know that benzene does X, Y, and Z and is odorless so it can't be detected? And I'm not really getting a sense that we need to be digging into the background of each of the contestants. And like if this was Clue, I mean, going back to the movie, you know, you'd be looking for, you know, I mentioned how last time Dawn was the last person to come out onto the patio, or you'd be looking for when certain events took place, who wasn't in the room. And like, just like in the movie, if you go back, you could say, oh yeah, you know, Yvette the maid was actually the last person to enter, or she wasn't even in the scene. And so that's the time when she was killing somebody else. But there's nothing really kind of leading us toward that sort of situation in trying and why it's important for us to understand who the killer is. It's just that one of the people is the killer. Otherwise, it's just a series of murders that need to be solved.
Yeah. Ray Watson wants to know, are the contestants not allowed to accuse the butler of being the murderer? My 7-year-old Sammy says the butler did it. How pissed will you be, Kurt, if at the end of the season it is revealed that Giles is the murderer?
I'm not going to be terribly pissed. I thought Giles was the murderer in episode one.
Oh, everybody does. Everybody thinks Giles is the murderer. It's the only thing that makes sense that Giles is the murderer.
Right. It could very well be. And I think that you've got a future 7-year-old gumshoe in your family then if that ends up being correct. But I'm not going to be terribly upset. But at the same time, because it's so unimportant that one of the guests actually be the killer, I think this game could just as easily take place knowing that there's a killer loose in the house and it's not one of the guests in this killer and it's, you know, solve or be killed. And the game could still work. And, you know, it could very well be Giles. And I think that Giles will be back for season two. I'm putting it on the table there.
What if he gets arrested as the murderer?
That's what I'm saying. He'll break out of prison, and then that'll be that. But no, I think the odds are high that it's going to be one of the contestants. I don't think it actually is going to be Giles. If it is, I won't be terribly pissed off. It'll be a little bit of a slap in the face to the viewers if that does happen. But I won't be terribly upset.
But the odds are also very low of a whodunit season two.
How dare you, sir?
Ratings were not great for week one. They said it was a soft premiere. We'll see if it improves in week two. All right. So I got a few questions in a row here from one of our listeners, Bat Chimp, a.k.a. Psycho Chimp on Twitter. First thing he wants to know is, why did Dante's socks remain in the pool? Does the killer have an accomplice?
I think when they were removing, we didn't actually see the body being removed from the pool.
They used the skimmer for that.
They just happened to fall off in there. I don't think the killer has an accomplice.
Okay. Was it Giles? Could he be the accomplice?
I'm guessing it's one of the maids.
Okay.
I still have my eyes on the maids.
All right. Question number two from Bat Chimp. Why is Giles rocking a Lindsay Lohan ankle bracelet? Now, is Giles on probation?
He's on house arrest, I think. And it was very, very loosely touched on. I think it's just meant to imply that he can't go anywhere. I almost hate to say this because it's one of those things where if I'm right, I feel like I might have spoiled something for the upcoming episode. So should I say it or not?
Say it.
Okay. Like at this point. So, last episode, Giles tells us that everyone's going to be issued estate pajamas and socks, and we kind of blew it off, but turned out that actually that was important to know because it was the different pajamas and the socks and the static electricity that were instrumental in the death. Now, LoJack, explosions, golf carts. Are you seeing the trail that I'm kind of laying out here? I think that little clue about the ankle bracelet that Giles was wearing, I think, ties directly into how the golf cart exploded after perhaps it took off a certain distance from the house.
Okay. Well, we'll see if your theory is right.
So I'm now looking out for the little things that that Giles says as hints for like solving upcoming like little one-off things like that that potentially lead to the solutions for future crimes.
I think you could be going down the rabbit hole with that, but we'll see.
Okay, we'll see.
All right, Bat Chimp also wants to know, did Dante die so someone could use a Dante's Inferno reference? Show likes literature references. Why else would you have a man named Ulysses? Do we expect there to be when Ulysses gets murdered, will there be some sort of a, like, they'll talk about how Giles will come in and say, Ulysses' Odyssey is over.
I'm hoping not.
Yeah.
But the fact that I'm saying that, if I'm correct about the exploding ankle bracelet thing, and it's linked to how the golf cart exploded, the ankle bracelet was revealed before it was known that Adriana was going to be the one that was killed. So I'm saying the exploding golf cart seemed to be the predetermined way for somebody to go this next time around. So my guess is, if that's true, then Dante's death would also have likely been the death of whoever was the first person to get killed.
All right, and one last question from Brian Scally, who wants to know, so when Adriana said the medallion exploded, how did she propose that it then reformed into one piece?
Leprechauns, I think.
Leprechauns.
We didn't get to hear her theory. I'm sure there's something about... let's see. Adriana actually was at the... she was at the crime scene, so she did see the full chain. I didn't know if she was in a different location where she didn't get to see it, like if she was in the Dante's room, but no idea. Again, I chalked this up to the whole, Dante's drowning theory for Sherry, and I took note on some of the stranger accusations. Someone said that there was accelerant placed on the doorknob. No idea how that would have actually worked. And again, Melina said that she thought that Dante had drowned in the pool, never mind the fact that he was on fire. But no idea.
Okay. Well, and one last question for you, Kurt. Let's check in on our picks from week to week as to who is the murderer. Do you have an update on your pick for the murderer?
I do. And again, it's one of those things. And it's weird. It's not like we like on Survivor or Big Brother where you can talk about changing theories and who's strategizing in certain ways and who made a good move. It'll get the further in the game. This is almost feels like if I'm right, I'm spoiling something. But if I'm wrong, but
no, you don't know. There's no whodunit spoilers.
That's exactly it.
Guessing.
I'm guessing. But I found it. And this is the other thing that's odd. I found it strange, the very striking red bow that Dana was wearing in her hair. And it turned out later we saw that Sasha was also wearing the same bow, the same just really stark red bow in her hair. So even they're sitting next to each other on a couch, and just really kind of struck me. And then when we were being taken through the flashback of Dante's death, there was this very bright, striking red bow that was wrapping up his special plaid pajamas.
Hmm.
And I didn't know if that was meant to be a link. Like, again, this is me just scraping for some sort of clue as to the identity of the murderer that we might be being shown. The only downside of that is that's a flashback that the players aren't seeing, just like Sherry's shower flashback last week. If there's clues being revealed in those flashbacks as to the identity of the murderer, that's not something the contestants get to see, and so not something that really can factor into their guessing.
Okay.
But I thought that bow in her
but
hair...
But it could be something the producers are putting out there to give you a hint at home.
Right. Like, they did that a couple times on The Mole. So my shift has... My mind is focused actually a little bit more on Dana and Sasha. I was originally Dana, and then so when she was actually in the quote-unquote bottom two, I was like, well, I'm pretty sure it's going to be Adriana that goes home, because I think Dana's the actual killer, and sure enough, Adriana went home. So my money is actually on Dana with Sasha as a backup, just because of the red ribbon.
Okay.
That's all I got.
I am going to stick with Don. I don't have any reason to switch from him, and I feel like Don is a good pick, and I have no reason to change it up at this point.
And I'm guessing you'll not get a reason to change it up unless Don dies, because we're getting fed precious few clues about this.
Hey, we'll see. We'll see what happens. All right, Kurt. Well, we have investigated yet another murder. Next week, we will open the case of Adriana and figure out where exactly the golf cart went off course. and try to figure all that out next week and all the explosions. And also, I know with Survivor, some people don't like to watch the previews, but I'm going to assume that's not the case with Whodunit. Seems like we have some gunplay going on in the house with Giles is going to be shooting a rifle around the house next week.
I have to admit, I avoided watching the previews because I didn't want to see any spoilers. So I completely...
You are the 1%, Kurt.
I am the 1%. I don't know. It's like turning ahead a chapter. I just didn't want to... I'll watch the previews next week.
Okay. All right. Sounds good. And Kurt, thank you so much.
Yep. Thanks a lot, Rob.
And for everybody else out there, we're going to be back on Wednesday night with our next podcast. We'll be live after the first live eviction on Big Brother 15. Can you believe it? This Wednesday night, I believe the live shows are on Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern. So we'll be live at 9:15 p.m. Eastern time with Ian Terry to break it all down after the live evictions from Big Brother. And thanks to everybody out there using our Amazon links. Always appreciated when you start your Amazon shopping at robhaswebsite.com/Amazon. Kurt, everybody else, have a great week, and we'll talk to you again soon. Bye.